Kamada Akona Kamada, and welcome to Satsang with the Shambhala Center. You are beginningless. You are endless. You are divine.
Good evening. This is Shisala Kono Kamada. I'm joined tonight by Kiyala Yen. Thank you for tuning in to Satsang this evening. We're going to start the session off with a clearing and then a short guided meditation after. So if you can take a deep breath, call yourself forward. Mother, Father, God that I am, through the Great Central Sun Hierarchy, through the Office of the Christ, through the Order of Melchizedek, I call upon Archangel Michael to bring the sapphire blue ray. Cut away, cut away, cut away anything in all of our four lower vehicles not emanating directly from our I Am presence. I now call on Archangel Zachiel, keeper of the violet flame. Blaze, blaze, blaze the violet flame through all of our four lower bodies. Transmute, transmute, transmute all the psychic debris Michael has cut free. I now bring forth the invincible ring pass knot and the mirror blue light of invisibility to completely surround each of us. And I now call forth pure shafts of pure Christ light, one to surround each of us. And I ask that these tubes of light be brought to the center of the earth, where I call on Archangel Gabriel to seal them. And I ask that the legions of Michael completely surround each tube of light. And now I ask that our vibrations be raised high above the psychic and astral worlds to the highest realm of illumined truth that we each can attain at this time. Now, Mother, Father, God, we place ourselves in service to you and to humanity. Kalyan and I place ourselves in service to all of you listening. We ask that only that which is direct from you be permitted into our perceptions and that all else of the lower mind be kept out. And we ask that only that which is direct from you be permitted through us. Because we have asked this, we consider it so. And so it is. Beloved I am. Beloved I am. Beloved I am. I'll ask you to stay in this beautiful space that we've created. We're going to bring our attention back to the heart center. Again, if you want to find your heart, the quickest route is love, praise, and or gratitude. So let's find something to feel love, praise, or gratitude for. Bring it into your heart. Focus your energy right there. Focus your awareness there. Move your conscious awareness to the heart center. Feel it radiating out. It's beautiful. Let's make an intention now to bring in the energies that can come in through the crown chakra, down in, through the top of the head, and into the heart center. And open yourself up. Just set the intention to allow that flow of energy to move through your crown and into your heart. And expand out in all directions from the heart. You can visualize it too. It's actually quite powerful that way. A very golden white light coming in from the crown. Now we're going to take our intention to our root chakra area. We're going to pull the energy in from the soul star at the center of the earth, up through the earth, and in through our root chakra and up to the heart. Ooh, there's a lot of movement on that one. That's good. One last focus of attention. Simultaneously, set your awareness in pulling in the energies from the root and the crown at the same time into the heart center. And focus on that energy just beaming out of you in all directions. Some of you may feel like a 1,000-watt light bulb right now, and that's a beautiful thing. All right, take a nice deep breath. Thank you for sitting in short meditation with me. We'll go ahead and get started. Kellyanne, do you want to share anything about your little meditation experience tonight?
Sure. So I saw Archangel Camwell while we were doing that exercise. He cracks me up. At the point where you said to bring it in from the root chakra and the crown chakra, he has these two electric cords, you know, and he brings them together and plugs them both together. You see everything go like, and then you're like, some of you feel like 1,000-watt light bulbs.
That's fantastic. Oh, I love it. That's just great. Just great. So hopefully we did get some beautiful feedback last week on the meditation that we did last week. And so we'll continue to do these little short meditations prior to really launching into the program. It seems like a nice thing to do to get everybody in a great space to allow themselves to kind of take in all of the energetics and the information that comes with the programs. Okay. We had a couple questions come in from last week's program that I specifically wanted to answer. Again, if you have anything that comes up during the course of the program where you are left with a question, please, please do send them to us. Questions for Shusada at theshambhalacenter.org. Or you could also, I guess, leave feedback on the BBS page as well, and we could get them that way. But the question email is specifically set up so that we can make sure that we get your questions. Let me start off with the one we had from a gentleman here in Charlotte. Let me just pull it up and make sure I have it in front of me. This person actually couldn't listen tonight, so I wanted to make sure I actually emailed him, but I want to pull that up so that I can answer it here because this may be something that some of you have looked at recently too. Okay, I'll just read the question as I received it. I am a man who finds himself attracted to both sexes, but I wonder about the energy balance of same-sex couples. For example, in Taoism, while homosexuality is not forbidden, it is not recommended because there is no yin pole. Of course, each person contains yin and yang, and some might argue that even a straight man can be more yin than yang. For me, this contradicts my current model of understanding that body is mind, even if we are not this body. So the question, can same-sex couples have completely balanced energy? And then the next question was, can a male have more prominent feminine energy than masculine? And let me read to you, I'll probably pretty much read my response to him, although I may elaborate here. It's an excellent question, and the timing of it is really good as well. So as with everything, I can answer this question from multiple levels. Obviously, he, in bringing the Taoist example in there, that's one way to view it. It is focused more on the energetics of the physical realm here. And what I want to do is answer the question from a non-dualistic perspective. I want to pull out of here kind of all together so that we have more of the higher level of understanding coming in to really answer the question. So what I said to this person was that in the higher realms, there is no gender as we know it. Higher realm beings, beings in the illumined worlds are really more what we would consider androgynous, because you are a perfectly balanced individuation that is masculine and feminine, perfectly balanced together, and all of it is one. Now, in those realms, you can certainly choose to outpicture yourself in whatever form you desire. So there may be, you know, for some, like we picture Archangel Michael as a masculine presentation. That's really not very accurate, but that's not to say that Archangel Michael doesn't just present as what we picture as masculine, you know. So that's certainly open to however we want to present ourselves. Another understanding that many of you would not have is that even the act of sex itself and sexual attraction is a completely different thing there in the non-polarized realms than the act of physical intercourse is here. That's not how beings of light bring forward a quote-unquote child. So to give you an example, beings of light, if they choose to bring forward another being of light, first of all, they aren't birthed as a baby the way we think of it. It's a blending, a very conscious blending of their rays of light. So in this reality, you know, you've got the merging of the egg and the sperm, and then the DNA blending that takes place, and then, you know, the whole process of pregnancy and childbirth. Whereas in the illumined worlds, it's more of an instantaneous kind of a process, but it's very focused energy, and the rays of light that construct one individuation merge and combine with the rays of light from the other and create what is to be their quote-unquote child. So I like to look at the question from that space. And what I said to him concerning here, because obviously this person is living here, right, for the time being, and wanting to have his question answered from this place. So I said the presentation and identification with set masculine or feminine traits and energies here is only a conditioned set of beliefs held by individuals and the collective as a whole. The true attraction one feels toward another when coming from the heart, and not the primal attractions which stem from the lower three chakras, emerges from how one perceives and responds to another's essence. So when coming from the heart, you fall in love with the essence of someone, not the personality or the physical shell of an individual. And I went on to tell him that it is increasingly more common to see humans who are attracted to both sexes, especially among younger people now. Many of these more advanced souls have very little identification with the social norms that the older people live in and have been swirling around in for many lifetimes. And they see past any sense of collective shame about same-sex relationships. It really is wonderful to watch this aspect of the collective matrix beginning to unravel. It's beautiful because, you know, who is it that you fall in love with? You know, you fall in love with the essence of an individual, and that essence has nothing to do with being male or female, just nothing. And it's only, you know, last week we talked about shame very specifically, and there is a huge, just huge amount of shame that has been programmed into the collective matrix concerning same-sex relationships. And while, you know, remember, it's only the lower mind that presents things as if it has to be one or the other. The lower mind just can't sit in the space that both can be true simultaneously. And so I always come back to there was a thing I read once from Swami Vivekananda that I just adored because, and I couldn't even tell you exactly how he wrote it, other than to say that he really made a point of saying that it's not this or that, that kind of like everything here exists on a sliding scale. You know, it's all a matter of degree, I think is how he worded it. And it was so poignant for me when I read it because it was like, oh, that just is perfect. Because what better way to get yourself out of the mindset that there's right and wrong if you actually see it's just a matter of degrees? You know, if certain matter of degrees go to this side where it seems more right and a certain matter of degrees goes to the other where it may seem more wrong, but there's everything in between. And when it comes to this, this is exactly one of those spaces. You know, in nature, you see same-sex relationships just in the animal kingdom. And this is in a polarized world, right? So you would think that in the polarized world, you've got masculine and you have feminine. And so it should be that those two poles come together. And that may look like it's very true here, but we actually see everything in between here too. And so it's important to keep that in mind when we're looking at these questions that have so much charge to them, you know. And I give this person, you know, a lot of credit for even asking the question because it's a very loaded question, you know, especially in the Western society. It's just, people here still carry such a, polarized view of who you're supposed to have relationship with, you know. And here's to, just to show you how, remember, it's held by the collective. This is the thing that we have to remember. It's held by the collective. So for as quote unquote open-minded as you may think you are, I will even challenge you there that at least a little bit is still sitting there. And I say that because it's very easy to say from a mental place, well, of course, you know, if you find yourself attracted to another man, that's fine. I don't have any problem with it. That's great. Okay, beautiful. Now what I'm going to ask is that let's sit you down in your living room and let's turn on a movie. And in that movie, two men fall in love with each other instead of a man and a woman. And let's watch you squirm while it happens. All right. Because generally speaking, most of you, even if you have a very open mind and you say, and you think of yourself as a tolerant person, right? You still, when presented with it right in your face, most likely you're still going to see, there's going to be this piece that comes up that goes, I don't quite know. Like, I don't feel comfortable looking at that. It could be the most beautiful expression of love you've ever, ever encountered, you know, the most pure and beautiful expression. And you would feel uncomfortable viewing it, because you would see it as man and man and not see it as heart and heart, which transcends any sense of, you know, masculine or feminine. And so this is, I love the question and I love the opportunity to answer that, because this is a beautiful thing for people to start to really look at. If you're listening to this program and you really do want to make great strides on your spiritual path in this lifetime, these are the things that are just key to really, really begin looking at. Because the collective is holding them so strong. I mean, you have the whole entire Christian world, you know, who have all been raised that you do not do that. It does not happen, right? Yeah. It is a sin against God. I mean, imagine the energy that's sitting behind that for the collective. So even if you weren't raised a Christian, you're still going to feel it. You see? You're still going to feel that energy, even if you aren't raised in it. It's how potent it is. And now is the time where we are watching this unravel. And you know, luckily there are huge soul groups coming into the planet, you know, who have been coming in, you know, very, very strongly since the 70s. You know, the Indigos coming in, and then there were other groups of souls coming in, and you know, the Crystal Kids and the Rainbow Kids. So the cool thing is that they come in, some of them are coming in very fresh, and they just don't have the experience here in this polarized reality. So they don't have that deeply, deeply entrenched sense of, you know, that this is right, this is wrong. And they're here to question that. You know, that's why the Indigos all came in the way they came in. They were here to buck the system. That's exactly what they were here to do, to point out all the places where the system was unbalanced in its sense. I mean, in a sense, it's balanced, right? Because it's polarized here and it's all being held and balanced. But they're coming in from a heart understanding. And from within that understanding, there's nothing more unbalanced than this reality and everything happening here. I mean, it's in direct opposition to what you truly are, what your nature is. So this is really coming up. And now we're seeing out in society and in this country, especially, you know, all of the, with the states, some of the states moving into the space where they're allowing gay marriage, and you see all the opposition coming against it. And it's like, wow. I mean, it's beautiful because it's all coming up. And that means if you're seeing it in the outer world, it means people are experiencing it in their inner world, right? Because you're going to see it on the outside when it's, everything is in turmoil and moving on the inside. So it's a beautiful, beautiful thing to witness. I'm very pleased that we're watching that happen right now. It is amazing. So if you are one of those people who have always prided yourself on being very open to, you know, anyone else's sexual preference, I'll ask you today to really take a very, very deep and very honest look at that opinion of yourself and see if it holds water. You know, is it really true, or is it something you're trying to convince yourself is true because you're trying to hold a space? And maybe what sits underneath it is still a sense of unease or dis-ease, right? And if that's the case, now it's time to start going in and finding out why that wants to hold on so strongly. If it's not there, it's not there. There's no like, I'm halfway there. It's either there or it's not. It can just be incredibly subtle, but it's there or it's not. So that's a beautiful thing that you can all look at in the week to come. Okay. And then we had another question. Killian, do you want to read me that question?
Yes. Okay. Question is, I agree that shame is a great topic to talk about. I wanted to ask, when it comes on, which happens to me every so often about things in my past, if I just sit in it and feel it, then what do I do with it? I normally just tell myself it is in the past and push it away. If I sit in it and just feel it, will it go away by itself?
Okay, so the answer is no. Wouldn't that be lovely? If the answer was yes, none of us would need to be here. Right. Okay. So she kind of gave us a really distinct marker when she said that when it comes up, she'll say it's in the past. And then what does she say? I push it away.
She pushes it away.
Mm-hmm. Okay. And that's beautiful. So there's repression going on there, right? And that's not going to work. Now, when I ask you to sit with energy, there's a definite purpose for that. And it's because you need to see what the energy behind it is doing. Remember, I told you there's a whole biological component to what's going on here. As far as the thought comes, the energy's running, and then it's looking for this place to dock in. So when you can stop yourself from moving through the pattern the way you normally do, it actually kind of intercedes and it stops that energy from running the way it's used to, and then you can sit and just kind of watch it. It's not easy to do that, but you can do that. For questions that come up concerning shame, you don't want to push it away. There's a reason it's coming. And that's the thing that is very important for everybody to have an understanding of. There's nothing that's going to come to you in your awareness that isn't coming at the perfect time. Everything that comes, I don't care what it is, but every single thing that comes up is coming up to be looked at in the most perfect timing there is. Now, you can push it away. You have free will here. So, you know, by all means, if you're uncomfortable and you don't want to see it, push it away. But it doesn't mean that it's not waiting for its next opportunity to come up again for you to look at. So that's, remember, it's kind of like you start to move through your world as if you're kind of the news reporter of your life. And you have to be willing to view everything from a very objective place. That means that we stop thinking of our own experiences, our own beliefs, preferences, all of that as ours, and we start to view it as just something that was learned Okay. And because it was learned, it never was us to begin with. You see what I'm saying? It never was us. It's like, a psychologist will tell you all day long, you know, we aren't racist just by nature, right? So when you see small children together, they don't pay any attention to skin color. It doesn't mean a thing to them, right? It's something that's learned. So if it's learned, was it ever you to begin with? Well, of course not. So what made it you, right? Whatever made it you, now we can call you a racist. So why is it that we can do that? Well, because now you believe a certain set of beliefs that we're going to label as racist beliefs. And now you are that, right? So when shame comes up, and if you see something that you've done in the past that you feel shameful about, beautiful. It's wonderful. Sit in it. And let's find it. Let's find why you feel shame for it. Right? Maybe there's something that has to occur there for you to make amends with another person or something, in order to clear it, right? Maybe you're harboring, a deep sense of guilt because you left something in a way that just wasn't right action, and you can take steps now to rectify it. Even if it has to do with a person who's passed, it doesn't mean you can't go in and rectify it on your end, right? I mean, remember, you aren't responsible for the karma that's being held by another person toward you. You're only responsible for your end toward anything else. So you can always clear your own karma. The other person doesn't even need to be present. So with shame, yes, to sit in it is beautiful. Don't push it away. Look and see why you feel shameful. Because what's sitting at the very bottom of it is a belief, probably more than one, but at least one belief, where you truly think that you have done something very wrong. I mean, to sit in the space of shame, you're feeling like you've done something that is, you know, unforgivable, most likely. And then you don't want to look at it because it's too much. It's too painful to have to accept that about ourselves. So when you've done something and you feel terrible that you did it, you push it away because you don't want to sit in the space of, oh, I'm a horrible person, or gosh, I'm so unloving, or I was just so mean, or, you know, whatever it is. It's incredibly painful, but it's necessary because if you do something in the world, and we'll use another person as an example, that is incredibly hurtful to another person, and you never allow yourself to really see it from all the angles, so to speak. You only see it from your own viewpoint. So let's say, you're a parent who gets really angry at a child and, you know, not only strikes the child, but like literally beats the child. Okay. The natural thing after that would have occurred, obviously, whatever occurred, that person moved into a space where reactive mind was so strong that they couldn't stop themselves. So once it started, it was going to run, and it was going to run its course. Now, for a person who is going to push that aside, which most people would, it allows them to continue to justify their behavior. So deep down, they know that what happened was wrong, you know, and universally it is wrong to strike another person. It's just wrong. So that does sit there, but we can justify it because we can, you know, we can pull up any kind of thing. Well, my parents hit me. So, and I turned out okay. God, I've heard that one before. That just kills me. That kills me. But that's one. Or it could be that, you know, it's something that they always used to hear, you know, there are little sayings about kind of the switch and the, I don't even know what they are, but there are sayings out there, and it's stuff that people would hear. So we have this concept, and then collectively, you know, different societies and how they deal with their kids, and you see things on TV, and like, there's all this stuff that sits there that allows you to justify pretty much any behavior you want to have. There's enough out there, and you can find justification if you're looking for it. So for the parent that, you know, has just literally left bruises on their child, they can say, you know, I'm sorry I did that, but you shouldn't have blah. And they've just justified their way out of their behavior, right? Remember I said that anytime you apologize and the word but is involved, it's not an apology at all. You know, it's your justifier. So that person at this point, even though the pain is sitting there, because the bottom line is that the heart of this parent and the heart of that child haven't been touched. They're still whole. They're still pure, right? It doesn't matter what happens here on a personal level. You can never injure another being, okay? You can never damage them. You can never take away anything from the perfection that they are. The heart is untouched, okay? But from a personal level, deep inside, that parent is going to feel remorse for what they've done. If they allow themselves to really look at it, they will, and they will feel shame, okay? Because how could you not? Here's a little person that you love so dearly, and to see what you've done and to see that child in pain, you know, physical and emotional, would be very difficult. And to continue to push it away is the one thing that will keep it so that you can always do it again. Yeah. Because what's going to stop you from ever doing it again? If you have the justifiers in place and you believe that it was okay. But if you allow yourself and you don't push it and you feel shame come and then you sit with it and you look at it and you get into that space where it hurts to the point where you may end up weeping and in physical pain because of how difficult it is when you recognize the pain you have put another person through, then there's a shift that can occur. Because when we actually own that side of ourselves, when we own the darkest parts of ourselves and we allow ourselves to really sit in that place and feel the pain we have inflicted on others, whether it was conscious or unconscious, but we feel what we've done, then there is an opportunity to clear it so that it doesn't ever have to come up again, right? But without that, there's no reason for it not to, because you always have an out, you know, until you've sat in it. And so that's why I will always tell everybody, you know, when any kind of painful thing comes, look at it. I mean, just look at it. Tears are not a bad thing, you know, and anybody who has done very deep work will tell you, I mean, just the tears that we have cried. Huge, huge amounts of tears, sometimes just because of our own story, sometimes for the collective itself, you know. And it becomes a very natural thing to cry. It's a beautiful thing. Beautiful. It's a beautiful release of energy. People restrict themselves and push it back so much. And it's such a wonderful, wonderful thing to allow to happen when it wants to come. So for the person asking the question, yeah, when you do find the shame, now it's time to really look at it. Find out what it is that you feel you've done that was unforgivable, and it's time to dig in and really start looking at the beliefs that sit there. Where did you learn it? Find where you learned it. You know, you picked that up from someone, most likely a parent along the way, or you know, someone close to you when you were young. You would have picked it up, and then you took it on as your own, and then you've been functioning from that space. Well, when you've done enough of the work and you find that for every aspect of the personality that you're kind of not pleased with, when you find that you can look at every single one of them and you can link it back to a parent or something, right? And then you look at that parent, and if you're blessed enough to have some history to your family where you can talk to, say, your mom and say, well, tell me what grandpa was like, you know, and she gives you stories, you actually will see how the patterning repeats itself, and you'll see it. And there's no denying it once you really start to see that at that level. And then it starts to truly lock in, like, oh my gosh, like, I'm a program, you know, it's just this program that's been taught over and over and over and over again. And the sense of who I am has just been programmed into me, you know. And that's a little disconcerting in the beginning, right? Because we all want to think we're all, you know, unique and special and all that. Well, in essence, in your essence, you are unique and, you know, special. Couldn't even begin to cover what you are. But the personality isn't special at all. There's nothing special about it. There's nothing unique about it. The personality is just, there is one personality and it's being perpetuated by the lower mind. And that's all there is to it. And it is just a program. It's just a program. So how do you think, did we cover that enough?
Yeah. Yeah, I think that was good.
All right. Let's talk. We had a really cool thing come up within the last couple days that I wanted to bring up because the timing is so good. And for those of you listening in, you know, in the beginning of your work, it is very personal because it's all about kind of digging in and finding all the beliefs that are being held that, you know, that can be seen through and they'll kind of dissolve and you get to function from your heart. It's amazing. Well, at a certain point, and then this may be, you know, a little premature to bring up, but I'll bring it anyway because it came the way it did. So there's a point at which the work on the personal self, maybe kind of takes a backseat because you start to witness when it's not personal anymore, it's not personal. And your experience of your own life, it just becomes a very different thing. And then what you start to witness is that what you're seeing that's going on in the personal life is just a reflection of what's actually happening on the collective level, because the collective as a whole is doing this thing together. Remember, there's one mind. So it is that one mind and it's all coming. So it comes in groups of things, like simultaneously, and you'll see it. Now, if you're someone like myself and you have the opportunity to work with people the way I do, I get to see it come up in them. And it's amazing because you'll have 1 week and like you'll talk to six people and five of the six have the same exact issue that week, you know. So you can't not see it, that the collective is obviously dealing with this particular thing. So I just had an example of this come that was very, very, very cool, just the way spirit works. And I like to always bring people back to, you know, spirit is always moving through synchronicity. And to pay really close attention when you do witness synchronicity, because it's being presented to you directly from spirit. It's so beautiful. So I was witnessing this sense a couple days ago of futility. It's the best word I can put to it. A sense of, you know, people would think of it as kind of like, why even bother? You know, like, I can't make a difference, or it doesn't matter how hard I try, nothing ever changes, like that, right? And that came to me not as words, but as an energy. And I recognized the energy, and I was just looking at it going, huh, look at that. Look at that energy. And I was looking for it, knowing that there was something more to it, but I did bring it into my personal experience. And where I brought it in specifically was I was looking around at my physical world. And there was this sense that I've had for a very long time that I come back to every now and again when I'm speaking with the Tonon. It's that thing that says, you know, it is futile here. Because this is a polarized world, right? A polarized world that's being held in balance. So it's balancing the positive and the negative. And I'm looking at that going, well, wait a minute. So that means that literally it doesn't matter how hard you try to bring peace to the world. If both sides have to be balanced, for as hard as you try, you can't make headway because it has to be held in this certain balance. And so within that was where I saw the sense of futility, because I looked at my own world and I was like looking in my backyard. Of course, it's winter, you know, and here in North Carolina, it won't be long and we'll be out gardening again and doing all that. And I was looking and thinking, you know, when it comes to anything that you have this inner sense of beauty, right, that you love to see expressed in the world, but to bring it forward in this world, is impossible to maintain without the constant work behind it to maintain it. And that's what I was saying, because I'm a big gardener. And I was thinking, you know, to have all your gardens and you put all of the work in to make them gorgeous. And then unless you happen to be extremely wealthy and you have a gardener who comes and takes care of your gardens for you, you're out there sweating, you know, working in the dirt, which can be, you know, a beautiful experience in itself. But either way, you're still out there expending your energy just to maintain that thing of beauty that you created. And as soon as you stop doing it, it goes back to its natural state, which for a lot of people may not be considered beautiful. Now, of course, the beauty is always there. So you're going to have to kind of, you know, forget that little piece for a moment. But that's what I was seeing, that like everything here, it has to be maintained, like everything. Your home, you have to maintain it or it ends up looking horrible and it's dirty and nasty, right? There's all this work that has to go into that. There's work that has to go into your personal hygiene, how you keep yourself. I mean, you can't just completely neglect that, or the body itself gets to looking not so good and smelling so good, right? And it happens on every level. And so the energy of that was really, really sitting with me. And so I called Atona and we were talking, and we were actually talking about how the collective is really dealing with all of this pain. It's very, very, very deep pain that's sitting, you know, down there. And it is exactly that. It's this collective feeling of futility that so much of the planet is really experiencing right now. And literally, right after I got off the phone with her, I came up and I got on my email. I hadn't been on for the day. And a friend of mine had sent, my telephone. I had a voicemail on my telephone. And a friend of mine had called and said, I wanted to tell you, I saw this interview of these scientists with Krishnamurti. And he said it had only like, you know, like 67 views on it or something, but I thought you might be interested and let me know. So I texted him and said, I'd love to see it. You know, can you send me the link? So he did. And it was a very cool interview that I only got a couple minutes in. I didn't even get that far into it, but it's a series of interviews that he did with these scientists, very renowned scientists, Bohm being one of them. And they're talking about kind of the nature of psychological, what's the word I'm looking for? Well, problems, we'll just say. I can't think of the word right now. But Krishnamurti said, and I just laughed because of the synchronicity of it, you know, just coming off of that conversation I had, and I will quote him here. He said on the video, he said, the nature of the self must intrinsically bring disorder. So they were talking about, you know, what is it to be psychologically balanced, basically. And what he's saying is you can't be balanced here, because the nature of the self, small s self, that's the personal I, is intrinsically built to bring disorder, right? That order only exists outside of the personal I. It can't exist within the personal I, because the personal I, as soon as it comes into form, creates the polarization that keeps it from ever experiencing peace, right? And that's exactly what I had just been saying that same day. And then today, this evening, when I was telling PLAN this little story, what did you tell me?
That this morning I felt this energy come in and I knew it wasn't mine, but I actually had recognized it because I had been in this place before. And it was that very deep sense of hopelessness. When you reach like the very bottom and you're just ready to give up.
Yeah. And so she saw that today. And it's right in alignment with what I just saw. I guess mine was 2 days ago, but that shows you, I love to bring you stuff like this so that you can see this is how it works. When you can start to pull back, you know, it's like your consciousness is like a little spotlight initially, and you're hyper-focused on the little personal self and its world. But as you continue to evolve, your consciousness backs up and it becomes more of a floodlight, right? Excuse me. And it starts to see things from a different place. And this is a perfect example of how we're seeing that this thing, this hopelessness, the futility, the despair, all of this stuff that's just sitting there with collective, it's all coming up. And so I'm saying this to you because I want you to look in your own world where you've been seeing something in your own life and viewing it from that lens. Why do I even bother? Oh, it's just hopeless. And it doesn't matter how hard I work. I'm never going to get any better at it. I can't ever expect it to get better. All of that. And I want you to try to pull back and let's not make it about you. And let's recognize that it's something that every person on the planet is seeing right now. Now, some of them are, doing what the questioner earlier is doing and pushing it away. So it comes and they push it away. They come, you don't need to push it away. Allow it to just come. You can sit in the energy of it and you can know it's not my energy, right? And then the beautiful thing you can do to be of service for yourself, service for humanity, is to allow the energy to be there and really look at it and sit in it and allow it to feel icky and make you cry and make you want to retch, do whatever it's going to do. And to call in the violet flame and ask that violet flame just blaze through all of that energy and to transmute it because it's discordant. The energy is discordant and it needs to be transmuted back to its perfect state so that it can be reutilized. Okay. And that's a huge act of service that we can all do. And even just in your own space, you don't have to do it for the collective. Some of us are called to do it for the collective. You don't need to. If you see it just in your own world, just do that. Find where that, feeling hopeless sits. And just, it's like back to our thing with the Buddha and the Bodhi tree, right? And the demons. And I said to you, it's all this stuff in the world that's constantly pulling at you. Those are the demons. This is what I'm saying today. Today we're looking at, the collective is dealing with a sense of futility, the sense of despair, the belief that I can't make a difference and blah, blah, blah. Those are all the demons that the Buddha came up against. And what did the Buddha do? The Buddha held a single point of focus, right? That point of focus was God or source or the creator or whatever you want to call it. It doesn't matter. And that's how we're being called to move through this world at this time. You find that point of focus and you hold it and you let the other stuff come because it's going to, you can't make it go away. You're in it until you're not. And you're very innocent here. I don't care what it looks like. You're very innocent here and you're going to be in this until you're not. And what you're witnessing at this time is the dissolution of an entire paradigm. We're watching it happen. It's happening internally. And because we're all going through this from an internal place as the self, capital S, presents greater and greater here, we're also witnessing it in the outer world. Okay. So hold the point of focus that the outer world, those are those demons that they're trying to get you to attach to them. That's what they're trying to do. If they can get you to attach to them, and if you make it about my job and I can't ever get a raise, or if you make it about my boyfriend, I can't ever get him to do this, right? That's, those demons are winning out. And that's what's keeping you stuck, and it's going to keep you stuck, indefinitely. At some point, the point of focus becomes so strong on the light, capital L, or on the creator. And that's the only thing that you see. And so the rest of it can come and it's not me. It's not me. That's not me because I am that. And your point of focus is God. I am that. Beloved, I am. Beloved, I am. You are that. And that is the only thing that's real. All right. We're going to leave with a song. So we're going to take it into meditation. Let's use this meditation. We're all going to call in the violet flame. Pielian and I will facilitate from here, and let's see if we can't transmute whatever energetics came up for anybody tonight that we can set free. So set that as your intention, please, that if there's something that you have seen tonight, it's time to love it free. Okay, love it free. Thank you so much for watching. We will be with you again next week, and we love you. Thank you. Waiting to see if, okay, it's meditation. Love you. You are divine.